Welcome to MGO Radio 4.87.
I think we made this one seven.
Seven. We are not live from the Bow Store on Main Street because of technical difficulties. Please keep us in your thoughts and prayers. The mellifluous laugh you just heard is Carl Grapentine. This is a great honor for both of us to have the greatest public address announcer in the nation today. Sitting with us
anywhere in America today.
Oh my god, the voice! Oh my god, the voice!
Well, thank you very much. It's great to be here. I've been an MGO blog reader for years and years, a very occasional contributor, but this is great to meet you guys.
Yeah, it's great to meet you. And we were talking kind of before the show about how you were the band guy for a long time, and Howard King was the PR announcer. And then I forget the guy's name at Yoast. I think his name was Glenn. But he was an older guy who retired about 10 years ago, who also had that just amazing, like, voice of God. you'd have this Michigan experience where everybody talking from the press box just sounded amazing. And then, the opponents would bring their band in, and their band director would get on the microphone to introduce the band. And it was always like listening to someone who had just had a hit of helium, like, welcome to the band, it's a band show.
Yeah, the experience of covering Michigan and going to like a lot of away games now has completely changed. I thought that all stadium announcers sounded like you.
Right, and then you have like Bud Lynch with the Red Wings.
Sure.
Like you just kind of go and you expect that.
Even the old Tigers guy was awesome too.
Right, yeah. I mean, you go to a basketball game and it's Mason. It's a different vibe.
Yeah.
I just felt for like a lot of these teams, it was just like this was what a public address announcer is.
And I've talked about that with the guy at Notre Dame, and we talk about how what we think of as the class places don't have to be such out-and-out homers and yellers. Then, I was at Northwestern a couple of weeks ago, and every time it was a first down, we're going to move those chains, he'd call attention all day long to the fact that it's third down, and they get the Wildcat.
Right.
I don't know.
We just talked about the Wildcat.
Maybe people think we're boring, but I think it's the way it should be. So,
well, it is just kind of an amazing thing that I think is very Michigan. Like, like of all the things that about the game day experience that are like right in the heart of what I think is culturally.
Yeah, it becomes something that's. So I do a Carl Grapentine impression for my kids all the time.
What?
So, well, my daughter more when she was
stadium, like the game Carl Grapentine or the band?
It's the voice of Michigan Stadium.
Okay.
When my daughter needed to be bounced around a lot when she was 1 year old.
Sure, yeah.
And so I would do the band, take the field, and then I can't do the full thing
know,
in front of you.
But then
bounce around the kid a whole bunch, and it was her favorite thing. She wants to play Michigan marching bands.
What a World guy. Like, the whole point is that nobody sounds like this person.
Right. No, but my kid, when you're one, you'll take like a bad facsimile.
Facsimile. He's a reader, folks.
Yeah.
I mean, that's what happens to me, too. Like, I read words, and I don't have any idea how to pronounce them.
Some people at this table are better at pronouncing things than others.
I used to say I have it right now. I used to say banal.
Banal?
When it's banal.
Oh. Yeah, I had some words like that, too. I think, spatula. Spatula.
What?
Spatula.
Wow.
Right?
That's really
good. I had a hard time with Segway.
Segway.
Yeah, until the machine came out, I thought
there were two different words.
Uh-huh.
One was called Segway, and one was called Sieg. And they meant the same thing for years.
Right, maybe one's
the
from...
The French version and the English version.
Right, and there's the bastardized Anglo-Saxon version is Segway.
Right.
Yeah. What's the hardest name that you've ever had to pronounce?
There were some along the way. The hardest game definitely was Hawaii 2 years ago. Every single, especially, I think it was the year before, we had a lot of WAC teams, and they usually had Polynesian/Hawaiian names.
Yeah, Utah was still
there, too. Yeah, had several, but the Hawaii, the entire roster. Still remember the Kawalamatangi brothers, Mefi Kawalamatangi and Leo Kawalamatangi, and et cetera, et cetera. But if I may say so, I nailed them. So I well, got him right.
You and Ace are the king of name pronunciation around these parts. I mean, I want to talk to you about like how you first kind of got involved with this. Obviously, you've been a radio professional for a long time. Mm-hmm. And is how do you get hooked up with first the band, and then you're obviously the heir apparent when...
Yeah, well, the band came first even before my my professional career. I just retired after 46 years in radio, most of them in Chicago. But this is my 49th year with the band.
Really?
So I started when I was a student. Most of my friends were in the marching band. I was an oboe player, so I didn't march in the band. But I used to hang around. And a friend of mine was the announcer of the 1969 season. He graduated. I auditioned the next fall for the legendary William D. Ravelli. And I've been here ever since. So since fall of 1970.
Did you sound like this when you were like 20?
Yeah, pretty much. Pretty much the same. I thank my mom or my dad or somebody for that. My mother was a music teacher and a singer. My father was a minister.
Yeah.
So I come by it, honestly.
It's just strange to think of a college student who sounds as...
Right. Like when you think
imposing.
About... Imposing. Putting someone in charge of being the voice of the stadium... You would not expect it to be like a 20-year-old
exactly.
kid. You like it's supposed to have that gravitas.
Well, the actual stadium announcers were older people, which I am now one. But from the mid-50s to 71, it was Steve Filipiak. Howard King started in 72, went until 2005. Howard got sick in 2005. He and I split that, and then I started full-time in 2006. So
it's been about a decade. Do you have like favorite okay. names? Like you really want this guy to get 50 carries in a game? Or
when we played Illinois, oh my gosh, maybe 10 years ago, they had a tight end who played pro for a while. I think he's with the Patriots. It was Michael Ho'omanawanui. But the first four letters are H-O-O-M. Just looks like whom, but it's
right.
Ho-O. Ho'omanawanui.
Like there's an apostrophe, I think.
I think so. Yeah. So it was Michael Ho'omanawanui broken up by Boubacar Sissoko at that particular era of Michigan football.
That's an all-timer.
Yeah.
Also a rarity.
Boubacar Sissoko breakup.
Just in that era, yeah. Anyone getting a pass breakup was like, wow. A little bit different now.
Somebody existed. Oh,
my very first year, I think it was somebody from when we played Eastern. Olivier Gagnon Gordillo. I mean, that's a cool yeah. name. There's a lot of different nationalities in there. But
So what's your preparation for these? Like, you're going into a Hawaii game. You get the game notes from the rest of us?
And that one, yeah, I started early. But usually, those things are available online. these days, pardon me. So I'll go to the Wisconsin website, get a roster, and then they'll usually have a pronunciation guide, and it is of some use, but not always. But I'll go through and make notes and make notations on which ones I need to ask about. And then the morning of the game, find somebody either from their radio station or from their sports information department and go over the names. And sometimes it's not the long, involved names that are hard. You figure it out. You got it. It's, you know, one guy's Devin and the other guy's Devon. And
right.
trying to remember stuff like that,
right.
you know, every week. So I'll make up my little charts and put a few diacritical markings in and hope for the best.
And you have a spotter who helps you, like, identify.
I do.
Yeah.
Bill Short, Dr. William Short is my spotter. I pretty much spot the offense. And then depend on him to point to our little chart as to who made the tackle.
Okay.
So in that spring game when Harbaugh had like four different running backs all wearing number 24.
Well, last
just
year,
the mess of you.
Last year when we had four number threes. I mean, each one had you know, Spate and Nordine and who was the other? I remember
Robbins.
What was the first away Gary. Game last year? Around the 1st of October.
Oh, yeah. I think it was Purdue.
It was when they benched Will Hart.
Yeah.
And it was Robbins who started punting.
Yeah.
But he was another number three.
Right, and they kept calling him Nordine.
Yeah. And I texted Dave Abloff, who was wherever they were, Rutgers or whatever, and said, you know, Fox is misidentifying the kicker. Right. And the next time they fixed it, we've been misidentifying this young man. So.
Well, so we were like really hyped about that. We wanted Foog.
Yeah.
James Folk.
James Folk. We wanted him to get number three.
We call him James Doug Folk.
Because we're stupid. but we wanted like the maximum number of threes you could have on a football
right.
team. We were like
each
one
with its own role.
Yeah.
Right.
So it was close, but no.
But actually, but now of course Jake Moody is becoming a folk hero, and I usually get a note from someone who teaches with his mother, I think in Northville or something.
Yes, he's
and,
in Northville. And
so he's a big hero in Northville now.
Well, you know. These things happen.
Yeah. He messes with people's numbers. Someone saw him coming to the game. I guess all the kickers were getting driven to the game, and he was kind of rubbing down his magic leg. And somebody saw that, thought he was Patterson, and tweeted out, "Oh my God, Patterson's getting a ride during warm-up." Right.
They're working on his leg. Something's wrong with Shea. Yeah.
There was like a momentary panic before the first game this year.
So we have a gimmicky top five that we do usually, and usually we invite the guests to like participate, but this time our gimmicky top five is just things we want to hear you say. so you can't,
okay?
Because I mean, you've probably already said all the things you want to hear yourself say. I think that's a
you can make us
supposition.
Say things too if you want to turn.
I don't think that's good. Seth, you're number five.
But koala
material. Can I just hand this to Carl?
Yeah, I was going to read them out and then have him.
I think it's best if he just reads. As they
okay.
as he sees them.
That's fine.
All right, ready?
Okay,
start.
What do we
just
got
read
here?
Just number five there.
Okay. Stadium voice or marching?
Oh yeah,
band
we want
voice.
The we want the voice of Michigan Stadium.
Okay. We'd like to thank our MGO Radio sponsor, Underground Printing, The Bow Store, Peak Wealth Management, Homeshore Lending, the University of Michigan Alumni Association, the Residence Inn Ann Arbor Downtown, Ann Arbor Elder Law, Human Element, Michigan Law Grad, and Lantana Hummus?
Lantana. We didn't give you any diacritical marks.
Okay.
That was a brilliant idea. Thank you, sir.
At least they got done this time,
That's value for money. All of
every one of them is gonna want a copy of it.
Right, I'm just going to... You read mine because I don't
okay.
have it. Oh, so my number five is the word mellifluous, which I've already used, but I just want to hear you say it.
So you want to hear me say mellifluous in a mellifluous fashion,
yes.
right? Mellifluous.
Thank you.
Yes,
that was
sir.
Very satisfying.
Okay.
All right. Here's my number four.
Here we go. Tonight we honor the 20-year reunion of the Birmingham Groves High School class of 1998. Remember, Falcons... You won't excel if you sleep through XL, and take that damn fool hat off. Rise up. Go beat the Mapes.
I did this too. Like I have a functional one. I have a functional one, but that's my last one.
Oh,
I've recorded two introductions to wedding parties for Michigan Band alums just in the last few weeks. You know, yes.
Well,
that's good.
There's a lot of people who are going to go crazy tonight because that's the tonight is the 20-year reunion that I'm missing right now.
And
so
you're going?
No, I'm here.
Oh, you're here.
I'm here, but they were supposed to listen in on the live radio show,
which isn't
which isn't happening right now. But I'll send them the
delayed
recording.
Gratification. Yeah.
My number four is my favorite Michigan name of all time, which, of course, is Tumunga Biakbatuka.
I remember helping people in press boxes that I was just the band announcer, but I was there. So, yeah. Tumunga Biakbatuka.
And so the thing is, like, when he was a freshman, this was kind of before the time when everybody knew every recruit coming in.
Right.
So it was just like, who's this guy?
People still would not have known him anyway. He was a nobody from Montreal.
Well, I mean, these days people would know.
We would know.
Yeah, but we're people.
Yeah.
And every time he got a carry, the audience, like, the crowd applauded. They were like, yeah, that's a great, that's awesome, yeah.
Well, do you remember, did you go back far enough? Howard King really made a thing out of Ali Haji Sheik.
The crowd
would say it with him.
I do not go that far back.
Early 80s.
Yeah. It was early 80s. It was in the mid 80s. I remember that.
81.
I think my dad just repeated that a whole bunch when I was a kid.
Ali Haji.
All right. Are we on my number three?
Yes, we're on your number three.
All right, here we go.
Okay. Okay. Penn State's sad field goal is good from 34 yards. The score, Michigan 31. Sheesh. Penn State 3.
Is a sheesh on there?
No.
No.
Okay.
Editorial comment.
That's the voice of Michigan Stadium.
Right.
Commenting on the events on the field.
That's unprofessional. He would never do that.
That's right.
My number three is a very dorky Big Lebowski quote, which is, "That's just like your opinion, man."
I'm glad I took this off my list.
Okay.
Oh, you took that off?
When I first sat down, like there were like three Lebowski quotes, right. And I like edited them all off eventually.
Well, that's just like your opinion, man.
Thank you. That was that was amazing.
All right, here's another. This one's going to be valuable to us.
Number two? Oh, okay, yeah. This is a pre-recorded version of the WTKA Roundtable on WTKA, unsurprisingly. 9 o'clock Thursdays. It is pre-recorded, however, so if you call in, no one will answer. And for that matter, what is the difference between recorded and pre-recorded? Little existential.
Right.
Yeah. He does it better than you.
Yeah.
Well,
that take that for granted.
Yeah.
His register doesn't go as high as mine, though. So I just want to hear you say, "This is Michigan."
Oh, okay. Yeah. That's a good one. This is Michigan.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a good one.
Yeah. You and Darth Vader are kind of like in the running for the top.
Wow. Yeah. I mean, to have
you got to get involved with like the game day, like, you know, the videos and
the
stuff
videos.
You play.
I mean, that's okay. The James Earl Jones can have it for now.
I mean, he's all right.
He was supposed to be here last spring, part of the bicentennial thing, and he was ill. I dearly wanted a picture with him. So
When I was a sophomore,
could he guest announce? Like maybe get like a couple of plays in?
No, we could. I suppose these days, you know, you sample everything. You can put together most any sentence from if you get enough verbiage.
When I was a sophomore on the daily, we were pushing hard to have him re-record all the crisp late.
I remember that.
Yeah, when you sign up for your classes, or at least in the 90s, it was like a telephone operating system. So right. You call in, "You've registered for LSA History 313, right? Yeah. And like. We were pushing
the
really hard.
The crisp lady, yeah.
Yeah.
The crisp lady.
Crisp lady. They wouldn't do it. He wouldn't do it, though. But
I wish I knew the specifics on this, but I have read that he has some restrictions, and if you go up to him and meet him, there are some things he can't say. Like, "This is CNN," or something. Like he can't do something that sounds like "This is CNN," or something like that. So I may be the best you can do.
Yeah.
All right. All right, my number one?
Yes.
All right. Make this one good, because it's for posterity.
Ladies and gentlemen, presenting the voice mailbox of Seth Fisher. Please leave a message.
So I this is exactly what I did, but I wanted to make it useful for everybody.
Okay.
So it's just you.
Well,
have
that was sort of in marching band style. Right. I could also do the voice of God.
You
stadium
have
style.
You have a text in the stadium style, and we're going to clip this and we're going to put it on so everybody when they get a text can have Carl Grapentine saying, "You have a text."
Oh, that's brilliant.
Okay. Okay. Yeah. What sort of in? How shall I do it?
Well, let's do the Michigan stadium style. And try to make it a little brief so that it's not. Too long
okay.
for people to actually use.
Sort of like, "You've got mail."
Right, yes.
AOL. "You've got a text."
Yes! That is going to be awesome.
I don't know. Is that enough
yeah,
stadium
that's,
to it? Yeah.
That's amazing. I'm so happy right now. Oh, man. That was awesome. Thank you for joining us.
Oh, you're welcome. It was my pleasure.
Anytime.
Absolutely. You're going to be doing the some recording for... you're going to be out there tomorrow in the admissions...
I'll be at East Lansing just doing the band. It's an easy week. Just 5 minutes of talking instead of 4 hours. So.
Yeah, it's...
a bit of a break, but then... Well, and then a week off, and then Penn State. Can't believe, I mean, 7 home games and 5 of them already accomplished.
Yeah, already in the books. So. They kind of went bang, bang, bang this year.
Penn State and Indiana, that's all that's left.
Yeah.
That's always a shame when Rutgers isn't coming to town.
That's the only game I won't see live this year. And I was thinking of going out there, but then I got a gig and it was too good to refuse. So.
You go to all the road games usually?
No, it's just that this year, you know, with the crazy schedule now that Michigan State and Ohio State are always the same, plus adding Notre Dame with Ficata, so we have to start there.
Right.
So 7 home games, and then the band... I say only goes to Michigan State, Ohio State, or Notre Dame, but They're all three.
Right.
So that's three trips for the band. So that's 10 weeks. I was at Northwestern. That's 11. So, yeah, Rutgers is
I kind of feel like the band should be going to places like Northwestern.
Yeah, especially the years where we're going to, because they're going to go to Ohio State twice in their career. On the, you know, it'd be kind of cool to have like a different one once in a while.
Last year, the only trip was the first one down to Dallas.
Right.
For the opening game against Florida. I was just looking at next year's schedule. You know, there may be no trip next year.
It's important to me as a fan, if I'm going on a road game, that the band is there.
Is that Northwestern
like just a funding issue, or is it like people won't let your band in the stadium? Or
Notre Dame just shoved them up in the corner.
Yeah, they did.
Let them.
I suppose it would be funding with three trips in one year, whereas usually it's one trip at the most two. So now it's already three. Plus, it's nice to have a week off in there for the kids at some point. I can remember when we went. You know, the last time we went to .. I think Northwestern was those two games in the mid-90s when they beat us both years. Here in 94 and there in 95.
Yeah, they're one of the Rose Bowl seasons. But it feels like, man, we should endow that.
I think if they're limited, if I was in the band, I would much rather kind of whatever Big Ten West team we're playing on the road that year, because we don't get to see them that often, I would give up Michigan State for that.
No.
Go a trip to Michigan State? What's that?
But like, you got to understand, like, when you go to Michigan State as a Michigan fan,
I've gone to the last three Michigan State away games.
Yeah.
And four, because I did both of the two in a row once.
You need the band.
And I couldn't hear the band. The Michigan State fans all around us were just booing throughout the entire halftime. It was why are we here?
So I'm in the Michigan section usually, which is in the top.
Yeah.
And they like turn around and they play to you. And it's just, you got it. They have to be there.
Okay.
They got to be there.
Okay.
Got to be there.
Okay.
When was it Ron Springs? Fell down in Ty Streets on 86th. And there's that little band of Michigan band on the corner at Columbus playing the Victors. Nothing like it.
That trip is basically free because you don't have to have a hotel or anything.
True.
Yeah, it used to be. Of course, that's another thing I don't like about the new schedule. Ohio State is virtually every year is Thanksgiving weekend now.
Yeah.
It used to be once every 5 or 6 years, but now it's every time. So we used to go to a high school outside of Columbus, Pickerington. Had a lot of Michigan alums come out of there.
Yeah.
We'd do a Friday night concert. The families would put us up the whole bit. But they're not even in session, so we can't do a concert. So we get up at 4 a.m. and drive down and drive all the way back.
Yeah, that's been a personal nightmare for me as someone whose family has a big Thanksgiving thing. And I'm like, I got a UFR this game.
Yeah.
Thanksgiving.
Yeah. Those of us who work for you, too. And starting it over Labor Day instead of, they used to start the week after that. And I have like a, don't want to get too much into family stories, but I got a family trip that we do every year for Labor Day, and it's just like impossible to miss.
Yeah.
2007 comes around. It's the first time that they're going to play a Michigan game on that. And I'm like torn. I'm like, whatever. It's Appalachian State. I'm not.
Uh-oh.
I'm going
all
up
right.
north.
That's one way to end this segment, Seth.
I'm the only Michigan fan in the country who had a good day that day. I had no idea what happened to the game.
Well,
I went to bed that night not knowing.
The horror.
Well, Seth, that's just great.
So I still don't go to opening games.
So it was your fault.
No. Ah, ha, ha.
Yeah, me and Crable. He was hanging up.
Oh, come on.
Yeah.
All right. I think this is now the end of the segment. Thank you very much for coming on.
My pleasure. Yeah. Thank you.
Sorry to do
that.
Thank you. Carl, pleasure to meet you.
Thank you very much. Take care.
Yep.
All right. This isn't live, but we're going to take a break, come back, talk about, the Wisconsin game.
Yeah.
Let me just tell you a couple things to keep in your mind while you're out there. When we take the field, we're going to win. We've got big goals. We've got big ideas. We've got to win this game, and there is no game on the remainder of our schedule more important than the one you're going down to the tunnel to play today. Now let's go. Let's go.
Underground Printing is proud to present the Bow Store. Visit us at our new location at 333 South Main or online at www.bow.team.
Yeah. Want the perfect game day outfit? Underground Printing has unique, great-fitting UM apparel and officially licensed apparel from legendary Michigan names like Woodson, Howard, Schembechler, Ufer, and more. UGP also specializes in custom-printed apparel and promotional items for groups, events, and businesses. Whether you need one shirt as a gift or 1,000 shirts for a charity walk, Underground can customize almost anything for groups large or small. To learn more, visit Underground Printing at one of our three convenient locations around Ann Arbor or online at undergroundshirts.com.
I grew up in a small town of Hazlitt, Michigan, and I witnessed a lot of great people making a lot of poor financial decisions. And I thought to myself, I don't want to be in that position. I don't want to have my retirement at risk. Over the last 17 years, my team has developed and refined our process, which helps people understand what's important to them and what they value most. And because people don't have pensions anymore, we're adding in multiple income streams during retirement. At Peak Wealth Management, our goal is to build long-lasting relationships, and we do that by building trust, by showing our integrity, and letting them know how much we care. And that's one of the most important things we do here at Peak, is understand your goals and help you get there.
If you find yourself on the wrong side of the law in Ann Arbor or around Metro Detroit, you want a Michigan man in the huddle. Call former prosecutor and now criminal defense attorney Jonathan Paul at 248-924-9458 or visit his website, michiganlawgrad.com.
The places you'll go may seem far from Ann Arbor. From San Francisco to St. Louis to Shanghai. But as members of the Alumni Association, we're never far. Because Michigan is more than a place. It's a mindset that connects us. For those who leave Michigan, but for whom Michigan never leaves, this is where you belong. The Alumni Association of the University of Michigan. Join today at umalumni.com.
I'd like to say hello and welcome you. Good day, that is my name. Come here and sit down. I'm so glad.
Welcome back to MGo Radio 4.7 live from the not live from the Bow Store. Tape from the Bow Store on Main Street.
We are doing it live. We are
everything is done live, Seth.
We are in now time. We're at now.
Yes.
Aren't we though?
That was an amazing segment. I'm still
Yeah. That and then the Ed Moransky segment from last year.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we should get Ed back on again.
I mean, just to get him to tell the same stories, I would do that.
Yeah, yeah. he's got more. We've done...
I'm sure he does.
Done like Alumni Association events with him before. And
it's true.
Yeah.
All right, Wisconsin.
Yeah.
38-13 victory that was, I would say, closer in spirit than in fact.
Thank you, Turtle.
Oh, my God. I mean,
should we launch right into that?
No, we've already talked all about that. So let's try to keep it to like...
We had like a 2-mile walk or a 1-mile walk after the game talking nothing about just that.
Okay, but we've covered that.
Okay, we've covered it.
So so the UFR.
Yes.
And I think you have to start with the offensive line. So I think Runyon is +9 with no minuses. Bushel Beatty is +19 with one half minus.
Good God.
He has a pass protection minus.
Well,
to be fair.
Okay.
We have to put on a lot of caveats here. One, Michigan had some new stuff that I don't think Wisconsin was adequately prepared for.
Right.
Two, Wisconsin's defensive ends are terrible.
Terrible. We knew they were going to be terrible, and I think I underrepresented how bad they were going to be.
And three, you know, they just played out of their minds. And I feel like this is probably going to be the high watermark for this season in terms of grading and probably terms of performance, at least relative to the opponent. But if they can just maintain 70% of this, this is a team that can win a lot of games.
All right, so last year, this stretch came at like the Minnesota, Rutgers, and Maryland stretch.
Indiana, too.
Oh, in Indiana, too. And Bushel Beatty was doing the... He started...
He's moving people. He's been moving people.
Right. And that was the first time that we really appreciated how much you can knock guys off the ball. Wisconsin's defensive end, one of them especially, was just on a whole other level. And I think Runyon got a lot of his pluses against the same, the redshirt freshman, the walk-on that they just threw out there.
I mean, both those guys were so bad, and they were kind of flipping. And then there were, I think the guy named Pfaff came in.
Yeah.
And he got wrecked. Like one of the clips, I'm like, the clip where it's like, this guy got wrecked. I think it was Pfaff.
Right. I didn't even bother putting him on the chart because he's a smaller guy. He's like a 250.
Yeah, but they tried him and it didn't
right.
work out. So, this is pretty much the best case scenario for an offensive line going into this game where right. it's like, this looks like a tough opponent and emphatically is not. But, even so, I mean, how many mental mistakes were there in this game? How many missed blocks that you just didn't get to the guy were there in this game? Almost none.
Yeah.
How many missed blitz pickups were there in this game? Almost none.
And they were running things that I've never seen them run before as well. So it's not like, they've repped power 1,000 times and now they're getting good at it. This
right.
was like, hey, let's try a style of zone running that we've never tried before. We're scooping everybody.
It was weird.
Yeah, and they executed it. I mean, the play was a kind of a weird play, but...
Well, the first one, it's like, you get... 4 yards on second and five. The second one would have been the same thing, except Wilson didn't get the cut in.
Right.
So that's a different thing that you can do, and it's tough, apparently, to hold up and prevent that from going any distance.
Yeah.
Just because you're getting whacked, and then you're like, oh, this is a stretch. I got to get to the sideline, and then someone else is like, going to whack you again.
Yeah. I've seen other teams do that before. I think Ohio State used to run that.
I just want to know what to call it.
So you had another one you came up with a funny name for.
Unicorn Salad, baby.
Unicorn Salad, right. So I've seen that before. Maryland did that under Walt Bell a bunch of times.
Who's Walt Bell?
The offensive coordinator they had, the crazy offensive coordinator.
Oh, the guy from a couple of years back?
Yeah, and they replaced him with Matt Canada, but like he was... We respected that guy, and he was doing that too. And I thought it was just because their tackles weren't their best blockers, so they were just using their guards as kind of edge guys. And then, it confuses the linebackers and spreads them out. It just creates more space in the middle. Michigan was using it to, bash guys and try to go outside. That one really weird.
Well, so it was just a down G, and then you get a backside guard pull. And that did, Connolly was just flying at everything in this game, and he saw that, and he was like, what is going on? But Michigan couldn't quite get that front side gap on the down G.
Yeah.
Because I think Gentry got pushed back a little bit. So Higdon had to cut back to where the linebackers were. But the linebackers hadn't moved since the start of the play because they were like, what am I looking at?
Right.
Well, so one of those things, like, if you hit it, then you've really bought two guys for the price of one. And you don't have to block them because they're just sitting there with question marks over their head.
Right. And I thought Michigan in this game, I think the game plan for this game was, we really have to confuse these guys. They wrote up a professional Ohio State maybe level game plan for this. And it was almost too clever at points. But most of the time it was clever enough. My take was they had that arc zone keeper that I drew up and everybody else drew up too.
Yeah.
And then later on, I think they tried to just make an arc zone keeper look or arc zone look and hand it off. And Wisconsin still played it the same way. And he should have just kept it on that one too.
Right. There was definitely a big misread on what looked like the exact same.
Right. And I thought at the time was like, maybe that wasn't a read. Maybe they're trying to punish them for overplaying the last thing they did. But.
So one thing that I thought was interesting is that, Michigan gets in short yardage and there's no Ben Mason.
Right.
They're in this too tight look from the shotgun. And especially right after the long Patterson run of 81 yards, they run belly to one side of the line.
Mm-hmm.
And the linebacker is held outside because he was just given an electric shock about we have to contain the quarterback. And then before the next down, Patterson flips the running back to the other side, and they run belly to that side for a touchdown.
Right.
And that's the weird, long, extended mesh point, which is this is a real read.
Mm-hmm.
And that was some nice coordinating, I thought. And I mentioned this in the UFR, I wonder if there was a little bit of a Ed Warner, please help us after the Notre Dame game. Because there were some, they did not take advantage of the fact that their quarterback could move very well in that game.
Yeah.
And they did in this game, and that's why they were able to just pave Wisconsin in the second half.
I mean, I don't have enough to say that, like, Harbaugh's
right, I don't know either.
Yeah.
But, like, Warner is the guy who has the most recent college running spring
right.
experience.
Harbaugh was doing with Kaepernick, but he had different staff. And
it's also in the NFL, so basically anything they wanted to do was easy. Because at that point in the
right.
NFL, like, it was like, oh, we complain about college quarterbacks. And now there's an offensive explosion in the NFL because they were like, oh, I guess this stuff works.
right.
And the article every year about how, like, college quarterback sucks. Like, Pat Mahomes went to where again? Texas Tech? Get bit.
Right. Right. Well, in the NFL, they can practice one of those plays a gazillion times, too. So, right. like, you have to pick and choose what you're going to practice.
Well, I mean, just because, you know, Harbaugh was able to rip off some big runs with Colin Kaepernick in the stone age of NFL zone read stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's great. But I feel like, you know, Warner's influence is pretty clear.
Yeah.
But one thing I didn't like is I didn't like Michigan's passing game approach.
Yeah.
So there were some issues where I felt like
from
Patterson.
From the coaching or just Patterson's eye?
Well, Patterson, you know, is bugging out and he's taking his eyes off receivers who are about to break open. So, you know, on the sack he took that where he rolled out and held it too long, if he just hangs in the pocket another second, he's going to see Gentry completely flip the hips of the safety on him.
Yeah.
And
is that the
bugs
that the play
early.
Where Perry was open too? On the
yes.
Yeah.
And that's a different thing entirely, because
yeah.
that's just, I didn't see that guy. But,
yeah.
you know, Patterson is looking at this guy. And he doesn't have the patience to see how this route is going to go. And I felt there was an issue earlier in the game where he had the kind of scramble sack. I think it was technically like a minus 1 yard sack. But so he's got Collins, and he's looking at Collins, and there's a defensive back with outside leverage.
Right.
And he's like, all right, well, that guy's bracketed. I can't throw the ball. But Collins makes his break, and the defensive back screws up, and now Collins has outside leverage.
Yeah.
It's like he's not giving his receivers the opportunity to use their routes for the powers of good.
Right.
And I like he's just a little bit impatient. And his pass protection now doesn't deserve that impatience, and I just feel like maybe he got sped up, and it's tough to decelerate.
Yeah. The other thing is I thought he does, especially when they came down from the sky cam, you really saw that he was kind of afraid to throw over linebackers or throw over somebody when he had a guy breaking loose.
I mean, I didn't see that in this game. I thought there was some of that in the
Northwestern game. So this is another game against a zone where he just, I mean, where the things are there, but against zone, you have to, you know, see it and then throw the ball to the spot.
So the other thing is I don't think Michigan is running route packages that are generally very good against zone,
mm-hmm.
especially like just the dumb, easy short stuff that can get you in a rhythm. So do we see curl flat in this game? No.
Right.
Did we see some hitches? Yeah, we saw some hitches, but we don't have like that vertical stretch of a cornerback where the guy's just picking how
right. I didn't see any smashes in this game, which is what you want to do. Against
right. Exactly. Yeah. So, I mean, there was the one kind of deep shot at Eubanks, and that was a flood route.
Mm-hmm.
And Collins gets bracketed, and then the outside linebacker is picking how he's going to be wrong.
Right.
And he picked the wrong way to be wrong, but he was going to be wrong. And I just don't feel like we were seeing a lot of that. Like, we weren't seeing a lot of double slants. There was a double in that he wasn't patient enough on. And that's good against this kind of zone stuff. But I just feel like, you know, Herbstreit's bringing up the Skycam, and he's just talking about like the route packages as being 1,000 yards downfield on every play, and I'm like, yeah, he's got a point there.
Right.
Like, I kind of disagreed with him about how open certain guys were, but it's like, you know, like, where's the like dumb slants for Michigan?
And there's also they were playing us off a lot in this game.
Yes. And yes, they were.
And I mean, Michigan took advantage a few times, but there were a couple. Every time they moved Evans, we were watching, Demarest and I were sitting together and like screaming about this, but every time they went like five wide and just put Evans out there, the guy on Evans was so far back. Evans, Chris Evans, you don't want to put that guy in space? Like
that made the UFR. I was talking about that too.
Yeah.
Yeah, because it's just so simple. Like, what can go wrong there?
Yeah.
Not much.
Right.
Right? Like,
right.
The worst case scenario is he gets tackled for 5 or 6 yards.
Right.
And the best case scenario is he does what he did to, I think, Bocce last year, where he just kind of jukes the guy in space and then he goes and gets the first down. It's like, just take the smoke and don't let people line 10 yards off you.
Right.
I thought Jed was really good at that, and I don't get that same vibe from
Pep.
From Pep.
Yeah, I'm not jumping on a Pep hating bandwagon.
No, I just
but there's a, but it's got enough steam out there that I'm afraid to like start criticizing him because that bandwagon's already getting going.
That's a good point.
Yeah,
but you know they didn't really need the pass in the second half, and that was a remarkable thing. They're showing various aspects, and if they have the ability to block anywhere near the way they did against Wisconsin, and I mean Patterson doesn't have to keep the ball 10 times a game. He can keep the ball 4 times a game and still have that impact that he had on that touchdown after his 81-yard run. That really kind of changes your equation as a Michigan run offense.
Yeah. It depends on who you're facing. Like, Michigan State's going to react to that differently than I think everyone else on the schedule.
Well, I mean, we should talk about this in the Michigan State section, but I feel like they're a little bit more conservative with their secondary this year, and you might be able to get some productive I option to guy off issues there. I mean, they may have come out entirely different against Michigan because that's how they do, but so far kind of feels like that would be a dangerous proposition. The defensive side of the ball, you know, I felt like the defensive tackles were game. They each had their moments, but there was just too much. I ended up on the ground, and like, you know, if you get on the ground, that's a minus two. And, you know, Monet hit the ground 3 times. Solomon got
I mean, I was noting who that happened against. And
they're really good players, but yeah, like I was...
By the way, I should have shielded Bo Benchwall.
Well, the interesting thing about Benchwall is that, you know, in the second half, I'm like, well, how did they kind of staunch the bleeding here? And I think a major reason was Aubrey Solomon.
Yeah.
So he was able to go up against Benchwall and put him in the backfield twice.
Second year in a row he's done that to him, by the way.
And then they're in 2nd and 7, and apparently that's just then you go die.
Right.
If you're Wisconsin, because you're like, let's go in the shotgun with this other guy who's not Jonathan Taylor as the running back.
Yeah, my takeaway from this was, first of all, Wisconsin's offensive line is so good that unless we play Alabama in the playoffs, like, this game is not particularly relevant to their play.
And, you know, Pro Football Focus does their grading, and one thing that jumped out to me is that when they rated the top offensive lines in the country,
right,
Wisconsin was number 2 behind, I think, Alabama.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, oh, this guy's got an 85 overall, and this other guy's got an 84 overall, and this other guy is like a 97 in pass protection. And then Ohio State is on that list at number 6. And they have a graphic of all of their grades.
Mm-hmm.
And like it's like, this guy's got a 74, this guy's got a 68, this guy's got a 64.
Right, they're nowhere close.
They're nowhere close. So like the drop-off, even from like the 2nd best line of the country to the 6th best line of the country, is really big.
Yeah.
And I think we saw that in the first half, where it was just like, I felt like they could get 5 yards whenever they wanted.
I mean, Edwards could be the first. He's going to be a left tackle in the pros, but he's going to be the first tackle off the board, possibly.
I've seen a little bit more conservative late first round grade on him, but
that's fine. But he's an NFL tackle. Benchwall is going to be one of the first guards off. Tyler Biadasz is maybe one of the best centers in the
Their
country.
Center, yeah.
And the other guys are, you know, more than game. So I think. I was so impressed with how Aubrey stood up to them, and he did it last year too. And then Dwumfor on passing downs was fairly. I don't know if he saw something more in the UFR.
I thought his main rush was actually blitz induced, where both guys left.
Oh, like someone's freaking out about Bush kind of thing?
That is exactly what it was. Because he came up and he was actually in man on
the... Darn, man, come on.
No, he was,
I'm looking for a little Hurst tip.
It was a good blitz. Like, he comes up and he's actually in man on the running back.
Yeah.
So he's in, he's waiting, he's looking. And the center is just there the whole play. Like, he's not engaging.
Right.
He's just kind of sitting there watching for the running back and then watching for the quarterback after the... And that's how he gets a sack. And so you've just spent a blocker on someone who's not rushing. And... while we're talking about David Edwards,
mm-hmm.
Josh Uche got about 10 snaps in this game.
Yeah.
And he came in plus 3.5. And 3 of those plays were against Edwards. So they're on the last drive. He's in this edge rush position, and he gets around at 8 yards twice. And those were an almost sack that Dwumfor fell over on. And then Hornibrook was able to get the ball out on time, but it was like a badly errant pass. If he hesitates for a second, because that guy's covered, you know, it's a blindside sack for Josh Uche against a first-round pick. So, you know, he did this a little bit last year where he's not in very much, but when he's in, he makes an impact. And like this game was like, it really felt like a Chase Winovich game from 2 years ago.
Yeah.
Where it's like, you know, once this guy gets starter level playing time, he's going to blow up.
I mean, he has been a guy, you know, I've been really excited about him for a while. They've been talking about his pass rushing since he came in. And I think with him, it was just getting everything else up there so he's not just a one-trick pony.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know.
Even as a one-trick pony, he's very, very useful to this team.
Like, I don't know if he can survive as a stand-up weak side end in this league, but...
No, but...
I would give that a shot. To be honest, yeah. I would give that a shot.
Yeah.
Like, not every down or anything, but if it's second and seven, like, yeah, let's go with that.
Or a weak side linebacker against spread teams.
Nah, he's an edge player. He's not an inside linebacker. He's an edge player.
He is. And also, the reason I got so excited about him was I watched a bunch of BC games when we got Brown.
Yeah.
And then Connecticut, too. Connecticut had a guy like that who was just destroying Michigan when we played them back in 2013. That was a Don Brown, Uche kind of character. And Michigan State's got a guy that they're doing similar kind of things. And having that on a pass down is such a weapon.
Any other defensive items I can think of?
I thought Hornibrook had his worst game ever, maybe, in this game.
Well, I mean, so a couple of things is that Michigan buzzes the first slant of the game.
Right.
Bush gets his hand on it, goes anywhere. Gets caught by Wisconsin, but the next slant they had was actually their final play from scrimmage.
which is what we've been asking for all year since the slant set. Showed something that can make that dangerous.
That came with a cost.
Yeah.
Because Bush isn't able to fire aggressively in the run game. He's not able to blitz as much, but the trade-off there. The trade-off there was absolutely worth it.
Yeah,
and so he shut off the slants. All right, well, that's one thing that Hornibrook's really good at.
Yeah,
and then all right, it's like a 15-yard out, and Michigan run a man coverage. This is open. It's a trap, and Long comes off the guy, and now it's like, I can't even throw.
Yeah,
15-yard out, and then it's like, screen. Quiddy Pay knocks it down. Like, I can't even throw a screen. Like, and he's Hornibrook, right? So he's not going to be like lasering in 15-yard deep outs or digs or posts. He's a guy who just kind of needs that over the middle intermediate game to really thrive, and Michigan shut that off.
I thought too that Michigan's defensive line was good at pushing on pass protection.
Yeah.
And you know, Hornibrook has had such clean pockets for his career that remembered what it's like to be a regular quarterback.
Remember when George Whitfield was like hitting Devin Gardner with a broom in the offseason? Nobody has ever hit Hornibrook with a broom. No. Nobody has ever been like, hey, throw with the broom in your face, buddy. And so Michigan was able to like get his feet and make him reset his feet, and he's not very good at that.
Right. So I came out more encouraged about defensive tackle next year. I think we got our Glasgow guy.
I mean,
Solomon.
I'm thinking more about the end of this year. I'm thinking, can Aubrey Solomon take this defense up another notch?
I mean,
because like he looked like the kind of guy who is a playmaker in the way that Brian Monet is not. I mean, he's a solid player.
Yeah, but Monet helps you unlock more of Aubrey this year. Because
how does this defense get even better? It's like, well, you add that Ryan Glasgow type in the middle, or I mean, Mo Hurst is out of the question, but
I will take a Glasgow Mike Martin style guy, and I think Aubrey is tracking that way.
We'll have to see.
Yeah,
definitely a guy who shows a ton of promise.
Yeah.
All right, we're gonna take a break, come back, and it's time to talk about the worst institution in the history of the universe, except for maybe Penn State or Ohio State.
They're worse.
Yeah.
Well, yeah.
Whatever.
All right.
We have a lot in common. You rode the bus to Bursley, so did Larry Page, and so did I. And we all love MGo Blog. I'm Nick Hopwood, your MGo financial coach. My entire family went to Michigan State, but I was the smart one finding my way to Ann Arbor to study econ. I've been a financial planner for 17 years, earning the designation Certified Financial Planner, and founded Peak Wealth Management in Plymouth. Oh, you're pretty smart, and you probably have a sweet retirement spreadsheet already. My job is to make sure. As a financial coach, I make sure you're on track, or if you're not on track, I tell you exactly what you're going to need to do. And if you listen, I'll be able to tell you how your future should look, just like the knowledge. And I have cool charts and graphs to tell the story, sort of like the Mathlete. To learn more or schedule time to chat, check out peakwm.com mgoblog.
If you're looking for a mortgage and you're a Michigan fan, there's only one place to go: Homeshore Lending. Fair and honest, Homeshore Lending is local, efficient, and small enough that you'll work directly with the owner, Matt Demarest. Matt bleeds maize and blue, and so does his family.
Hi, this is Matt Demarest, owner of Homeshore Lending. We're a local mortgage company based here in Ann Arbor on State Street, but we serve the entire state of Michigan, helping people buy or refinance their homes. We care about doing things the right way and treating people the right way, but we also care deeply about the Wolverines, and I wanted to introduce you to a couple of the biggest Michigan fans I know.
Hi, I'm Cooper, I'm 10.
I'm Colby, and I'm 8.
Who's the best team in the whole country?
Michigan!
Homeshore Lending at 2723 South State Street in Ann Arbor. For more info, go to homeshorelending.com. That's HOMESUREELENDING.com. Or call Matt at 734-531-9950. Homeshore Lending. NMLS number 1161358. Equal housing lender.
It's painless. It's online. It's group ordering made easy for your next custom printed apparel order. Pogo from Underground Printing takes the aggravation out of custom printing for a group. Whether you're selling shirts for a fundraiser, organizing a large event, or trying to collect sizes and payment for a family reunion, Underground Printing is here to help. Save time and hassle every step of the way with our easy-to-use site. No more guessing what to order, chasing people down to pay, or wasting time trying to sort out who needs what. We'll set it up and you can just sit back and relax. We can even take care of individual shipping. To learn more about Pogo, visit us at any of our convenient locations or at pogo.undergroundshirts.com. If you need a place to stay in Ann Arbor and don't want to be stuck out by I-94, there's a new hotel downtown, and the owners, who should be well known to the Michigan community, have asked our help to get the word out. The Martin family, yes, that Martin family, recently opened the Residence Inn Ann Arbor downtown, just a block from Main Street and a short walk to Michigan Stadium. They're competitively priced and offer a free hot breakfast, free Wi-Fi, fully equipped kitchen and every suite, and an indoor pool. That's the Residence Inn Ann Arbor downtown.
Do you see banana men hopping over on the white hot sand? Here he come with some for me, freshly taken from banana tree. Banana man, me want a ton. Give me double and a bonus one. Give me more for all me friends. This banana flow will never end.
Welcome back to MGO Radio 4.7, not live at the Bow Store on Main Street.
Yeah. This is, do you recognize this band by any chance? You're an old Ann Arbor, right?
Yeah, I don't.
Tally Hall.
Oh, I've actually heard of them.
Yeah.
I have a friend of a friend who used to manage them.
Okay.
Yeah, Al McWilliams of Quack Media.
Okay, yeah.
So.
I have a friend who probably knows Al Williams, but yeah. We played with them year in 2003. It was them and Edison Clio from East Lansing.
Are you talking about your band?
Yes, I'm talking about my band.
Nobody cares about your fantasy team or your band.
I'm talking about Tally Hall here, the band we're playing.
Okay.
So this is from their sampler.
I see.
And like, we always kind of argued after we heard this, like, who are these guys? What genre do they fit in? And finally, they got like a Disney TV show like a few years ago for four-year-olds, and it fit. Like, that, they took off.
Their music for four-year-olds?
They were always music for four-year-olds. And, like, as soon as they lost...
That doesn't sound nice.
But it's great music for four-year-olds. They just had to lose, like, the tongue-in-cheekness of it. Like, it's the same exact music. Well, they just, like, play it straight instead of playing it for adults.
And
now they're famous and big.
Upcoming four-year-old, so we'll see how that goes. Anyway.
Play some Tally Hall.
The Michigan State Football Spartans...
Ah, I hated watching this video. I hated.
I had to like tell you like to like not.
And I had to vent it into our Slack chat.
I was like, please don't write these things. In public.
I was clear from the start. I thought about what I was doing. I was venting. I put some of it on Twitter too. But like
Yeah, you put it on Twitter, and that's nervous because that's public. And I'm like, oh, that's paranoid, weird.
I know. I have some Penn State followers still from that book I did with them a couple years ago, so yeah. I figured they would appreciate
it. They would enjoy
it. Yeah.
All right. Anyway, the Michigan State Football Spartans, let's talk about their defense first because that's the more ominous section.
Yeah, they're back to being Michigan State's defense again.
They're not.
They're...
I mean, for one, they are
Very highly rated in the fantasy stats.
They don't have that ridiculous defensive backfield, but that was only
right.
a short
well,
time.
But so, yeah. so they're number one in S&P in rush efficiency defense.
Right.
But you go and you kind of look at who they've played.
Yeah.
And it's like the number 126 team, the number 107 team, the number 105 team, the number 91 team, the number 71 team, and then Penn State.
That's impressive you pulled those out.
I just wrote this.
Okay.
So,
yeah. yeah, like Utah State. Looks good in fancy numbers right now, and they're the best. But they're like the second best team and rushing team they face.
Penn State. And Penn State, yeah. like, so they get the two big runs from Miles Sanders. They average 6.4 yards a carry. And you're like, how replicable is that? And then you kind of go into the fancy stats, and the Penn State's line yards in that game mm-hmm. were slightly above average.
Okay.
So Michigan is closest to Penn State in terms of like average run game competence.
Right.
And I feel like they're probably more competent on the line of scrimmage and less likely to break a huge play.
So my problem, and this is going to be across the Michigan State preview, is that weird things happen with Michigan State.
Well, let's just talk about that like
weird,
at the end.
Spooky.
Let's talk
well,
about that.
So
the
it
end.
Goes to the running game because there were a lot more lanes that were open for Trace McSorley to run, and he was just like falling down or just
yeah. There was that fourth and four where he just kind of
yeah
goes down
yeah, and then like he like slams the ground and then looks at the ground like how did this just happen?
This sure
it's so. My point is that there were actually more lanes. Now there was one Miles Sanders run where he like slipped the entire team. Like everyone had a shot at tackling.
There was, and then the other one was some kind of bust, but they only had six guys in the box on a passing down. It was just like as soon as he broke through the line of scrimmage, he was done.
Yeah, that was the one time where they threw out the old John Reschke, who has returned, even though they really didn't need to invite him back for any
that,
reason.
That's the thing, is like, what, you need this guy? What do you...
And they very evidently don't because like he gets on the field for one play and he spends way too long buzzing the flat and you know his safety is ready to pick that guy up and he's out there. Batchy's like moving on to the next gap and signaling him take this gap.
Play by play is not good on the radio.
No, I'm.
I know it's a visual podcast,
but I'm saying like that. That was the biggest hole in their run game was when that guy's out there.
Right. But he won't be
right, but. But their run game is so good because they make those switches all the
run
time.
Run defense.
Their run defense is so good because they're so good at making those switches normally.
Well, and they've got, I think, two of the better defensive tackles in the conference.
Yes.
Like, Raekwon Williams is legit.
Yeah.
He has 18 tackles. Which
he
is
was, like, the only legit guy in 2016, too.
It's true. 2017.
No, in 16, he replaced Malik McDowell. McDowell was going on his like vision quests.
Right.
And he was a freshman at that point, and everyone was like, oh, this guy's...
He's a player, and like yeah. he has 18 tackles, which is a lot for a nose tackle in half a season of football.
Yeah.
He has 8 run stuffs. His average tackle is 0.4 yards downfield.
Right.
And so, to me, the key matchup here is Cesar Ruiz against him. And Ruiz has been doing very well. I think he's on that stardom track. This is going to be his stiffest test of the season.
Yeah. There's nobody who's going to be able to get inside of Raekwon Williams. He's got very long arms. He's just and that's what he's really good at. I don't think anyone that we've seen so far has actually tried to put him on the ground.
Well, to me it's like if you can get past the first line of defense, this year's Michigan State is not quite what they were before. So you have Bocci is making tackles 5.4 yards downfield.
Right.
And a Michigan State middle linebacker over the past decade who makes his average tackle halfway to a first down is pretty unheard of. Like,
right.
This is, I think they've just had to back off just a little bit. And the main reason is because their secondary does not have the talent that they had back in the golden days of their defense.
That's very true. I mean, the cornerbacks especially are kind of sitting back a lot more than they used to. The safeties are lining up on the same spot, but they don't take that hard step forward every play that they used to.
Yeah.
And they're still excellent in run coverage, especially, we'll get into Willis in a minute. But their safeties are always facing the play, and they're always coming down. And that's why they're such a good run defense.
Yeah, but they're more of a cover three team, so you don't get both safeties. And that was always the thing that was so painful about running against Michigan State is that they were essentially 9-man fronts.
Right. And they were 80-20 quarters or too high, which is like our...
Yeah, but
Yeah.
They go too high, but I feel like sometimes you see Michigan go too high and they're inserting Cannell and then
right.
Metellus is dropping as a
They did that a few times too, and I think that sometimes they also convert from one high to quarters again. Just, I mean, they're not going to show you exactly what they have every play.
Sure.
So I think that's a fair approximation when you kind of count one or two high of what they're running.
Well, so you were tracking their blitz percentages.
Yeah.
And it was really interesting to me because on a standard down, they're blitzing half the time.
Right.
Which is a lot.
Yeah.
And then as soon as they get to a passing down, it's a four-man rush almost every time.
Yep.
That is not very old sky.
No, it's not. And they're not even leaving the same players on the field. So what they're doing is they're taking the other Panishuk off the field, the not very excellent one, the defensive end one.
Yeah.
They're taking off their strong side linebacker, who's just a guy, and they're also taking out. Taking a DT. I think they take both Panishuks off the field for it. So anyway, that they're going to like a 3-3-5 or a 2-4-5, and there's a Uche kind of character who's in there, and they're trusting those guys to loop around and get it with four guys.
And it's not really working.
It's not.
But they're dropping seven guys into a cover three, and that's something that Michigan has struggled with.
Yeah.
So if you look at their stats, there's a huge gap between their overall efficiency stats.
Mm-hmm.
So they're like 77th in passing efficiency defense, which
right.
is bad. And they're like 100th in completion percentage allowed. And then when you get to a passing down, they shoot up to like 18th. And they don't give up very many big plays.
Mm-hmm.
And they're not going to let you convert on third and long. But if you're throwing on them on a standard down, they are worse than 77th.
They're probably like one. They're a terrible second and five team.
They're a terrible first and ten team. So like, if you're able to like get to those guys when they're being aggressive, because they want their run defense to be good,
mm-hmm.
the defensive backs don't have the chops to be like, I'm going to press you and you're going to deal with it.
So they are injured at cornerback.
Right.
I don't know how much that matters because I think Justin Lane is probably their best cornerback anyway, and he's out there, but he's a. I was trying to kind of figure out what's going on because I saw the same stats and when I was watching the game, I'm trying to like find a reason for what I'm seeing out there. And a lot of it came down to the safeties getting protected either by using a lot more cover three and leaving those cornerbacks too far back because there were a lot of passes completed underneath Justin Lane.
Right.
And you got a 6'3 cornerback. That guy should be in man quite often, I would think. Like that's a guy who's really hard to get off the line against. And
you
it's
mean
a guy
press?
In press, yeah. Impress, not sitting off in cover three.
But that's they're just a little bit less gung-ho.
Yeah.
And
but I think that's probably – my guess is because there were a bunch of plays. Lane's a great tackler, by the way. He's really good at, like, whooping a wide receiver and getting in there. And he's very helpful in there. But he's also back there, I think, to kind of be another helpful safety because the safeties are a little burnable.
Right.
And I think that's just a – hypothesis. I don't have a.
So
I'm not going to take that one to the
their
bank.
Plan is to like, all right, you're going to run at some point. We're going to stuff that.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to get in third down, and it's going to be third and long, and we're just going to make you make a play.
Right.
And if you can get into short yardage, if you can just move the chains on first and second down, if you can just take your stupid free yards on smoke screens or whatever, I think Michigan is going to be able to be tough enough to get. Convert third and short because I mean you've got the big boys and I respect the defensive tackles for Michigan State but they're not exactly giants.
There's so the other spot that I wanted to see us attack more and Penn State only kind of threw downfield twice, but when you go verts or if you're messing around, if you're putting their safeties in man coverage on your slot or DPJ in the slot, like that is a guy that's going to get open deep probably more often than not. And then you know, hitting those has always been a problem against Michigan State for reasons that boggle the mind because we have a quite large picture collection now of wide open receivers downfield and quarterbacks overthrowing them. Shea Patterson, we've talked about, is good at hitting those balls,
mm-hmm.
but it's going to be 20-mile-an-hour winds and rain and cold tomorrow.
I think the forecast is getting a little bit less grim as we go along here. So
Michigan State is eerie, man.
I know, but that's we're not in the We Believe in Ghosts portion of the podcast just yet.
Okay.
So let's take a break. We can get to the offense and, yes, the ghosts after this break.
Passion for e-commerce.
Sell stuff online.
Security. Performance.
Conversion.
Beautiful user experiences.
Belle expérience utilisateur.
Monthly marketing.
PPC SEO.
Make your user a customer.
Conversion.
Eau de Parfum for online retailers. Love your website. Let Human Element show you how. Available at human-element.com and find department stores, not find department stores.
The places you'll go may seem far from Ann Arbor. From San Francisco to St. Louis to Shanghai. But as members of the Alumni Association, we're never far. Because Michigan is more than a place. It's a mindset that connects us. For those who leave Michigan, but for whom Michigan never leaves, this is where you belong. The Alumni Association of the University of Michigan. Join today at umalumni.com.
In southeastern Michigan, the yearly cost for a nursing home averages $90,000. It doesn't have to, though. Reed McCarthy founded Ann Arbor Elder Law after handling a tricky situation for his own family. Years of experience later, his boutique firm works with clients across southeast Michigan dealing with Medicaid planning, long-term care, and tax, disability, and family law, not to mention family dynamics. If you have a family member who may need that level of care, or if you're ready to start your own estate plan, Reed can give you a plan for the future. Visit AnnArborElderLaw.com or call 734-945-9693. That's 734-945-9693.
If you need a place to stay in Ann Arbor and don't want to be stuck out by I-94, there's a new hotel downtown, and the owners, who should be well known to the Michigan community, have asked our help to get the word out. The Martin family, yes, that Martin family, recently opened the Residence Inn Ann Arbor downtown, just a block from Main Street and a short walk to Michigan Stadium. They're competitively priced and offer a free hot breakfast, free Wi-Fi, fully equipped kitchen and every suite, and an indoor pool. That's the Residence Inn Ann Arbor downtown.
Let me just tell you a couple things to keep in your mind while you're out there. When we take the field, we're going to win. We've got big goals. We've got big ideas. We've got to win this game, and there is no game on the remainder of our schedule more important than the one you're going down to the tunnel to play today. Now let's go. Let's go.
Underground Printing is proud to present the Bow Store. Visit us at our new location at 333 South Main or online at www.bow.team.
Things more than it should be, and greener seems to fall beneath your feet.
Welcome back to MGO Radio 4.7 from the Bow Store. Not live this time.
Unlive.
Undead. Welcome to our Undead podcast.
We are talking about ghosts this segment, so.
It's true.
Yeah.
But first, the Michigan State offense, which is pretty similar to the Michigan State offense from last year.
They are also undead. They are the same people from last year, and they were all.
That doesn't mean you're dead.
They are walking wounded. How's that? They look like a bunch of zombies. They just march forward with their arms out at you, trying to grab on and eat your brain.
So their run game is pretty atrocious. They've had a lot of offensive line injuries. They've had to rotate guys in and out. And LJ Scott's been hurt. His replacements are Connor Hayward and Ladarius Jefferson, who are both basically the same guy.
Yeah.
They're 225 pounds. They're three stars. They don't have a lot of wiggle. They can run some guys over, but they're not going to hit you for a big play.
Right.
And Scott
Unless
is...
Unless Connor Hayward throws over you, because he has one throw.
That pass was amazing. he throws it, and I see the coverage, and I'm like, all right, that's a pick. And I'm like, nope, because we're Michigan State. Anyway, that's a later segment. So they have an offensive line that's really struggling to pass block. They don't get a lot of bonus yards from the running backs. And Brian Lewerke is their best runner.
And he's getting ruined this year.
Well, I mean, he's got almost 5 yards carry, which isn't good, but it's not the worst. And he does make you play 11 on 11, so I think we're going to see a lot of him either running the ball or being in zone read option, or they're going to bring out the speed option. And I'd say he gets 10 carries, 12 carries. I think he's going to be a major factor for them. And
he's got to be. But I think the thing that freaked everyone out when Lewerke first popped last year is that he is a much faster runner than he looks. I know that's kind of a thing that they say too much on TV, but you see it in the plays that you think you've got him, and then all of a sudden he just edges you. And I expect Michigan has now seen him enough times that they've kind of kenned that down.
Yeah, his yards per carry has kind of gone off a cliff. Like last year, I think he was around 7. He was an infrequent but very effective threat, and now that he's basically one of 4 guys with 40 carries, like, he's getting more attention, and it's not really hasn't helped their run game too much so far, just because they can't block even when they've got even numbers.
Yeah, the speed option is still probably their best running play, and it's not a running play that D'Antonio is at all interested in building his offense around.
No, it's like a check they have. So whenever you present a third down defense that they think is vulnerable to speed option, they check to it.
Right.
So that'll be something that I'm sure Don Brown will either bait or successfully prevent that from happening. So this matchup for Michigan's defense should be pretty easy, except for the fact that that Michigan State is going to come out with a bunch of stuff they haven't shown all year. And can Michigan handle that? They couldn't handle it for the opener of the Defeat with Dignity game. And that was not a good Michigan State team. That was not a good Michigan State rush offense. But they were able to get guys in the wrong place and to rip off a touchdown drive on the first
series. I thought that was really one drive that exploited something that Michigan was doing.
Right.
You
think that's not going to happen again?
That was Don Brown year one. I think that now they have checks that they can make. And Michigan got stuck in the same cover one that entire drive.
Well, and, they've got a fairly clever end around that gives your wide receiver a lead blocker, which is not often the case.
So yeah.
It's something that you can adapt to, but you have to adapt to it, and it's really tough to do that on a fly on a single drive. Yeah. So that's a factor that you have to account for, is that there's going to be the new stuff.
There is, and they're going to bunch their yard. They're not a great offense, but D'Antonio has plays that he brings out. He's got just a few simple plays that are his base ones, and you can get those down. But then he always has a bunch of weird things, especially for bigger games. I'm sure he's going to have them for Michigan that you haven't seen before, and he breaks them out in high leverage situations, and that's how they. And that's that. My biggest fear for this game is a Northwestern-style thing where they just have all their yards on one or two drives, get 17 points out of that, and that's enough because the offense is struggling against them.
That is definitely a concern. Their passing game has been whittled down by injury, so Cody White is almost assuredly out of this game. Darryl Stewart has missed 2 of the last 3 weeks.
They seem to expect him back this week.
Yeah, he might be back. How healthy he'll be, how much of a factor he's going to be.
Yeah.
And then they have a couple of slot-type guys who are their other options who don't look that great.
Also, Jalen Naylor is like the speedy freshman that they brought in.
Yeah.
But he's also questionable for this game.
And then they have a tight end who's about to get run out of rail, out of East Lansing on a rail. So they don't have, if you are telling me that Brian Lewerke, who's a decent passer but is prone to some erratic throws, is going to be thrown over the middle to R.J. Sowards or Stewart or whoever.
Right.
I'm fine with that. They'll probably get some first downs here and there. I don't see them sustaining drives. But after the script stuff has been adjusted to, what is going to happen?
Well, so Michigan last year shut down Felton Davis.
They're going to throw it to Felton Davis 19 times.
And last year, Michigan shut down Felton Davis.
But,
doesn't
always happen.
Same cast of characters. No, it doesn't. So, Dave felt he's going to get his. He's a big receiver. He's mastered several routes that are good for big receivers. And,
he's a very good jump ball guy, good body control, finds the ball, comes back to it.
And he's much better this year at drawing pass interference calls.
But also, even though he's their top threat, his catch rate this year is 55%.
But that's just because they chuck every.
But I
if you're Lewerke and you have to do something with the ball,
I know.
Yeah.
But what I'm saying is that's against not Michigan.
Yeah.
So when he's got Lavert Hill on his grill, when he's got David Long on his grill, when Brian Lewerke is going up against the number five sack defense in the country, the chances that he gets the same level of production he has against the rest of the schedule are relatively slim.
So the more interesting thing I found from the Penn State game was he was throwing a lot of bad reads, a lot of them.
They had 16 PBUs, Penn State did.
And every one of them was Penn State jumping routes that they'd seen already, and Lewerke trying to fit balls into places that he shouldn't, and just throwing away. Sometimes he just doesn't look before he throws. And Penn State, especially when they're in their zone, were having multiple guys there, and I think they had a couple knockdowns where if it was just one guy in coverage, it would have been an interception. But because there's two guys going for the ball, you know, they're a little miscommunication. Who's got the, you know, got the front, who's got the back, and then, you know, the ball falls harmlessly behind the guy.
And he almost throws a game-losing interception on their final drive.
And that was like the fourth time that particular cornerback had jumped a route and got a ball in his chest and dropped it.
And like, because they did this to Michigan last year, where they were, I think, plus four in turnover luck, which was worth 24 points and a four-point win.
Right.
And they did it to Penn State. They were plus 21 points in turnover luck and a four-point win.
We're not quite at the ghost yet.
That's pretty ghosty. That's fairly ghosty.
And I watched the Indiana game, too, because so many weird things were happening against Penn State. And then I kept on seeing the same thing happen. Like, Felton Davis falls down on a route that is overthrown, shouldn't have been thrown in the first place. Cornerback intercepts it, and because Felton Davis fell down, a flag appears.
Well, I mean, this isn't something that doesn't show up in the stats. So, Lewerke has a touchdown-to-interception ratio of 8-7 this year.
Okay.
And it should be worse. He should be negative.
Yes.
And so, when does that come into effect? It might be this game. It might not be this game. But if you're telling me...
Because the... Turn to the mean always happens against Michigan.
Yeah, well, I mean, the deviance for the mean happens against Michigan.
Right.
And then they return to the mean against Iowa or whatever.
And they are completely deviated. They're more so this year than normal deviated from the mean.
Yeah, and so your expected turnover margin in this game should be like Michigan plus one. And if it's Michigan minus three, well, then they could lose this game. But is the fact that they're having a ton of interceptions dropped a good thing or a bad thing for Michigan? I think it's a good thing.
Yeah.
Like, we can get into, like, all the, like, oh, spooky business and...
Take away all the spookiness and, my God, Lewerke is getting rushed. He's throwing the ball into bad places. Yeah. He's locking onto one receiver because the other ones are injured. They really miss Cody White because he's the guy who can take the top off of defense. And everyone's safeties can play up on these guys because you know Felton Davis is going to get, you know, his coverage. And then everyone else is just kind of slots and... I mean, they're not... You don't want to throw downfield to...
R.J. Sowards and Brandon Nelson.
Right.
Cam Chambers, who was playing with a Massacoy cast on his head.
Yes. Yeah. He was good. He has been good in the past, but he's playing with a cast over his... over the middle of his hand. And in the Penn State game, they throw a ball to him, and he jumps up, and, you know, if he was healthy, there'd be a catch. And it bounces right off that little ball in his hand, and it's like, okay... That's a great play.
Yeah.
I'm sure they'll take that cast off and live with whatever he's got for this game.
So it feels like the way that Michigan State moves the ball in this game are scripted plays.
Yep.
New crazy stuff. Please cover the fullback out of the backfield when there's a fake end around everybody.
Take note, please. Yes.
And then they punt it to Felton Davis a bunch and see what happens.
Yeah.
And other than that, like, it's like, well, what are you going to – I mean, you're going to get, like, a slant here and there, but, like, how are you going to put together a drive? And this feels like another, like, 10-point, 14-point performance.
There's so many ways that Michigan State can – that you don't know who's going to start on this team right now because they've got so many injuries and they're
– That doesn't seem like an advantage for them.
It doesn't seem like an advantage. And then, historically, they've brought out two new safeties that we've never seen before, and they play out of their minds. Or L.J. Scott decides that this is the one game he's going to try
in the back end
of his career. Are we there yet?
Yeah, this
are
is
we
your,
there
this
yet?
Is your ghost section. Go ahead.
Are we going there?
Go ahead,
Should we talk about their punter before we go into the ghosts?
Oh, sure, let's talk about the punter.
Yeah, so Jake...
He's bad.
Well, Jake Hartbarger was a decent Michigan State punter, like they all are.
He was
are.
Pretty good.
Yeah. And he gets injured, and he's pretty much out for the season now, right?
Yes, he is out for the season.
They're going to try to get a Michigan State 6-year on him.
The replacement is awful.
Yeah.
Michigan State is 122nd in punt efficiency.
He's a redshirt freshman kicker that they just had, like, hey, can you punt? Like, they had no plan if Hartbarger went down.
Well, who has plans for their punters getting injured?
Your punters get injured sometimes. Nah. Like, you have a second guy who's practicing punts.
But, like, his
he's not just out there alone punting. Oh, I'm going out to do punt practice
today.
His
net average is 35 yards a kick. And he gets a lot of kicks returned despite having a gross average of about
40. Drives, too.
And, like, if Peoples-Jones is able to catch something on the fly, you could see something there.
So against Penn State, I thought they were trying to, like, angle them a little bit more and just, like, put it on the ground and let it bounce around and let it stop there and hopefully get some bounces. Because they're finally realizing that having him punted up in the air is either a fair catch 35 yards downfield or worse.
All right. Ghost time. Go for it.
Where do you start?
Well, I guess you'd start with a profane ritual that Mark D'Antonio performed upon his ascension to Michigan State head coach, in which he traded the dignity of the entire university for some wins over Michigan, and everybody was happily ever after that.
They are still very happily ever after that, and
yeah.
Michigan State fans, because of it, are the most impossible people to talk to about, you know, things that happened in the past are, you know, reflective of things that will happen in the future, except Michigan State wins.
Right. Well, that's kind of been the thing, you know. They get these crazy 5-turnover games. They get these punts and stuff, and it's like, oh, that's spooky. But I just believe that that's luck. Like, I believe Mark D'Antonio is a good coach, but I posted the SB Nation list of D'Antonio versus Michigan and how he beats the spread all the time. That article asserts that the dominance relative to the spread that D'Antonio demonstrates extends to the Harbaugh era. It does not.
Okay.
Because one of those games has a fumbled punt in it.
And a lot of other things.
One of those games is the defeat with dignity game, where that game is over at the beginning of the fourth quarter.
Yep.
And Michigan State is playing it to make it look good, and they score a touchdown with 1 second left on the clock.
And go for two.
And go for two. Give me a break.
And get peppers, which should have been like, that should have broken the spell
and
right
then,
there.
And then last year you have John O'Korn's first game after Purdue.
Uh-huh.
So you see the Purdue game, you're like, this is a functional human being at quarterback, and Vegas is like, this is a functional human being at quarterback.
Where the craziest rainstorm all year comes out when Michigan's holding the ball and goes away when Michigan State is holding the ball.
And then you have 5 turnovers for Michigan in a game that should have been maybe -1 for Michigan, and that's 24 points of turnover luck. So tactically, Mark D'Antonio was able to whip up on Rich Rodriguez.
Yeah.
Able to whip up on Brady Hoke. That has not been the case in the Harbaugh era, but because of some extraordinarily bad luck, a backup quarterback, and then the most pathetically face-saving fourth quarter in the history of the rivalry, it looks like it's the same thing. It's not.
Right, and I mean, you're going to Michigan State.
Does that convince you in no way whatsoever?
No, because like I watched the games, I saw it, I see it happen live. I absolutely know that Harbaugh will outcoach him, except for like the first drive or whatever.
I'm not saying outcoach.
Fine, Harbaugh.
I have respect for Mark D'Antonio as a coach, if not a person.
Yes. With a C, not with a K, respect for him as a coach.
Sure.
But he should be going, you know, 7-5, 8-4 every year with the teams that he's been putting together. And, you know, there was a couple good teams where he had those players. He does not have those players right now. And he has not had those players for the entire Harbaugh era, I don't think. So he had one, like, 2015, he still had a good team. But this is not a team.
Connor Cook, that's pretty good.
Yeah, but this is not the team at all that Michigan should be afraid of, except the ghosts are 11-0.
All right, buddy. I guess I convinced you in no way whatsoever.
It's going to be 20-mile-an-hour winds and cold and Michigan State.
I mean, I hear you, but I don't know, man. I feel like.
Like this man literally made a deal with John Engler?
No, I feel like
that random stuff is just random stuff. The punt is random stuff. The turnovers are random stuff. It's gonna be okay, and Michigan is gonna win 26-11.
Okay,
it's gonna be fine.
If I could believe it, I'd be going.
It's gonna be fine, people.
Who's got it better than us?
No!